From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Jesse Helms lectures the UN Security Council, but Caribbean diplomats want a more equal organization. No observer mission for Dominica's month-end elections, and Liat flights grounded by a flight attendant's strike. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report.
I'm being candid, of course, but I am here to plead with you that from now on, we all must work together to learn from past mistakes and to make the Security Council a more efficient and effective tool for international peace and security. But candor compels that I reiterate this warning: the American people will never accept the claims of the United Nations to be the sole source of legitimacy on the use of force in this world.
American Senator Jesse Helms speaking candidly to the United Nations Security Council earlier today. He was the first U.S. legislator to address the council and said he wanted to extend a hand of friendship. However, Senator Helms went on to warn the council that any U.N. attempt to impose its presumed authority on America would lead to the state's eventual withdrawal from the organization. We'll hear the response from Caribbean diplomats in a short while. But first, I spoke to the BBC's UN correspondent, Mark Davenport, to get an idea of why Senator Helms spoke to the council.
What is happening is that late last year, the US Congress proposed a compromise which would allow the United States to clear most of its $1 billion debt to the United Nations, but they put conditions on that. And that condition is going to be the subject of tough negotiations here at the UN, because other countries say they're already paying more in proportion to their national wealth than the US. And I think the reason that the senator came here is he knows that there will be tough bargaining in the months ahead. And this was an opportunity for Washington and the UN member states to look each other in the eye ahead of that.
But what difference can announcements from Jesse Helms make at the UN?
Well, I think they know that the senator holds the purse strings so far as Washington is concerned. It was a bill supported by him together with the Democrat Joseph Biden, which allowed for this compromise. And the member states know that whilst he has been a harsh critic down through the years of the UN, they have to at least take on board what he says if they're going to ensure that US money, which is very important to the organization, keeps flowing in the future. So this was why he was given this unprecedented opportunity to become the first senator ever to address the Security Council.
There was a bit of a Helms-Cuba dialogue. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Senator Helms made the point that the UN shouldn't be some sort of global authority above the sovereignty of its member states. But then he went on to say that not all the states were equal in his view. He basically puts the democracies above those that he says are dictatorships. And he isolated a number of cases where he said that Slobodan Milosevic or Saddam Hussein, and he also mentioned Fidel Castro, did not, in his view, have a sovereign right to oppress their peoples. That actually drew a protest from the Cuban ambassador, who was sitting in the audience listening to this. He wanted to make a speech to answer this particular point, but the US ambassador Richard Holbrook, who was chairing this meeting, wouldn't allow him to make a speech because Cuba is not currently one of the 15 members of the Security Council.
The BBC's UN correspondent, Mark Davenport. Well, currently the one Caribbean member of the Security Council is Jamaica. Ambassador Patricia Durant took up the issue of reforming the UN.
We also agree with you, Senator Helms, that the United Nations is not an end in itself. The organization can only reflect the will of its member states, as set out in the charter of our organization, to which we all adhered on joining the organization. And for Jamaica, this includes the payment of our assessed contributions in full, on time, and without conditions. We are committed to finding multilateral solutions to problems of peace, development, and security.
Jamaican UN Ambassador Patricia Durant speaking at the UN Security Council. Guyana's ambassador to the UN is Rudy Inchinali. He responded to Senator Helms's comments by telling me that there's a need for restructuring of the UN, which America has to be a part of.
Increasingly, in the post-Cold War era, there is a growing area of cooperation because no one state, no matter how powerful, can attempt to deal with the problems we now face of international drug trafficking, hazards in the environment, and a wide array of problems that really defy solution by any country. Therefore, I hope the dialogue in which we are engaged in, you refer specifically to the Helms visit, but I would hope more widely the international community can come to realize the value that the UN offers in terms of the money invested in it, and would see that there has to be a balance between the traditional concept of sovereignty and the need also to pool our sovereignties to some measure for our mutual benefit.
Senator Helms feels he can tell the UN what he wants of them. Isn't it a bad thing that a U.S. senator, albeit a powerful one, is in a position to dictate to the world body?
Dictation is unfortunate. I think each member state has a vision of what it wants the organization to be. But the UN is such that it has to be a collective vision that I hope that we can, as we go into a new century, come collectively to shape that vision and strategy for what we want the UN to be.
Ambassador Rudy Inchinali, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. In Antigua, five convicted killers are scheduled to be hanged next week. These planned executions next week, Thursday and Friday, are coming after a break of nearly 10 years and despite pressure from London and human rights groups for Caribbean countries to abolish capital punishment. The death row prisoners facing execution include Barbudans, Melanson Harris and Marvin Joseph, convicted in February 1996 for murdering four people. The four, two Americans and two Britons, were on vacation on a yacht off Barbuda when they were killed. More from Louis Daniel in St. John's.
The other men facing the hangman's noose, Antiguans Lauriston Cornwall and Michael Mason, and Confessor Valdez Franco of Santo Domingo. Cornwall is being hanged for reportedly strangling his girlfriend in March 1996, while Mason was convicted for the murder of Canadian Wendy Newbigin, who was holidaying with her family in Antigua the same year. Franco was sentenced to death by hanging for the murder of Ishmael Zarella following a dispute in February 1997. Attorney General Dr. Errol Court said the three of the five men will be hanged on Thursday and the other two on Friday. Dr. Court said the Mercy Committee has already reviewed the cases and was unanimous in their decision that the men should face the ultimate penalty of death by hanging. Louis Daniel in St. John's for BBC Caribbean Report.
The Atlanta-based Carter Center said today it has no plans to send an observer mission to monitor Dominica's January 31st general election. Opposition leader Rosie Douglas had been hoping for that kind of input by the center into the upcoming poll, but a Carter Center official has told Caribbean Report she was not aware that any such request had come from Dominica. There have been slight problems with voter registration ahead of the month-end elections. Earlier today, I asked Prime Minister Edison James whether the government was inviting any observer team to monitor the elections.
No, we're not involved in inviting an observer mission at all. There is absolutely no need for that. But that is just one of the gimmicks of Mr. Douglas. He's been involved here in election gimmickry, talking about declaration of assets, talking about him having freed Nelson Mandela. He brought peace to Ireland and now observer mission. That's just one of the gimmicks of Rosie Douglas.
There's been the problem of verifying the residential status of 22 registered voters. This has prompted the opposition parties to suggest that that's just the tip of the iceberg and there's need for monitoring the poll. Wouldn't it be in everyone's interest to do so?
I do not see any need for monitoring any polls here. There have been free and fair elections. As far as I'm concerned, there will be free and fair elections.
But are you worried at all?
No, that is an essential part of the process of electoral legislation, to verify the information and to get it correct. It's an essential part of it.
But the opposition parties have been pointing fingers at the UWP, suggesting that the Roseau Central issue, the UWP, is behind it.
The opposition party has been pointing fingers at us all the time. They've been pointing fingers on corruption. They have not been able to prove it, and so they're trying to drift away from it.
But it's been suggested independently, Mr. James, that the UWP isn't doing a good job of deflecting the corruption allegations.
No, it's not independent at all. It is by Mr. Charlie James, who clearly is biased. I mean, we don't have to prove anything. The opposition is charging us with corruption. It is their responsibility to prove it. You don't go to a court and say this gentleman has stolen and then tell him to prove he has not stolen.
But is it all just good business sense on the part of your ministers who may be involved in non-government affairs, or is there a lack of transparency surrounding the role of government ministers in private companies?
We are the most transparent government you have seen. We have gone out and we have exposed ourselves to the public.
But are you satisfied, Mr. James, that your ministers are all above board in their extra-governmental activities?
Totally satisfied, my friend. Totally satisfied. And this country is not about to get involved in people making allegations, accusations, cannot prove it, and then believe that that will take them through.
Prime Minister Edison James, a senior banana official, that's a banana industry official in Grenada, says he's not at all happy with the move by the St. Lucia Banana Corporation to break away from WIBDECO. The SLBC will in the near future be selling its bananas directly to GIST and not through WIBDECO. This is being received as a disturbing development in the regional banana industry. Lou Smith reports on the Grenadian reaction.
Daniel Lewis is the executive chairman of the Banana Society in Grenada. He says the move by St. Lucia is bound to make WIBDECO weaker, but hopes something could be worked out whereby the island's banana association could be together as one unit.
For example, St. Lucia has about 50% share in the banana industry in the Windward Islands. So clearly, if St. Lucia leaves, that means you would have a situation where a WIBDECO would become somewhat weaker.
In all of this, Grenada, with the smallest banana production in the Windward Islands, could be heartened with the news today that the British supermarket chain Sainsbury's wants to use Grenada to grow organic bananas, as well as mangoes, coconuts, and passion fruit. A report of the Guardian newspaper in England quotes Ian Merton, Sainsbury's commercial director, as saying he foresees Grenada going completely organic and Sainsbury's acting as an agent to sell the produce worldwide. The Guardian newspaper story goes on to say the Grenada government had offered Sainsbury's 440 acres of older plantations as a starter. This claim could not be confirmed here in St. George's. The Minister of Agriculture, Clarice Charles, was out of office making agricultural field trips, and her predecessor, Michael Batiste, now a junior minister in the Ministry of Community Development, was also out of office. Mr. Batiste is known to have discussed organic production with officials of Sainsbury's during August-September last year while he sat at the agriculture minister's desk. For BBC Caribbean Report, I am Lou Smith in St. George's.
The Cuban authorities have conceded that they are concerned that Elian Gonzalez may never return to Cuba. The 6-year-old shipwreck survivor was due to be returned to Havana last Friday, but lawyers acting on behalf of his relatives in Miami are pulling out all the legal stops to make Elian's stay more permanent. Emma Joseph reports.
Picture it, Elian Gonzalez versus Janet Reno, a Spanish-speaking boy who watched his mother drown at sea and was picked up by the U.S. Coast Guard clinging to an inner tube and the United States Attorney General in a courtroom battling it out. Since his arrival on U.S. shores, Elian has been at the center of a tug-of-war that neither Washington nor Havana appear to be winning. The U.S. Immigration Naturalization Service ruled that Elian should go home. So too did the Attorney General. But the true victors so far have been Elian's Miami-based relatives, with whom his mother was hoping to set up a new life. With her untimely death and Elian's father being in Cuba, the relatives that Elian lives with have become his voice. They say he should be allowed to stay with them rather than being returned to the communist-ruled island. They've found huge support amongst the vehemently anti-Castro Cuban exile community, and lawyers are working round the clock to ensure he stays. Of greater concern to Havana is the possibility that the U.S. Congress may introduce legislation granting Elian citizenship when they reconvene on January the 24th. But just what Elian wants has remained a mystery. Michael McCormick is the director of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. He is one of the overwhelming majority of Americans who are in no doubt as to what should happen to the 6-year-old.
This boy needs to be reunited with his father. That is a tenet that has been held up and upheld on numerous occasions. When you have a parent who passes away, typically the custody of the child goes to the remaining parent, sans any accusations of abuse or unfitness, and we have none of those in this case.
Everything about the Elian case has not gone to plan. Janet Reno's ruling that the boy must be returned is being challenged by lawyers in Miami, and they are showing no sign of letting up. The anti-Castro Cuban American Foundation leader is Jorge Mas Santos.
We need to be a step ahead of what the Justice Department and the Cuban government are trying to do here, which is trample the rights of Elian Gonzalez. And I think we're very well prepared. I think what we've done so far, the pundits would have said that by now Elian would have been back in Cuba. He's not. And a month from now, we'll be taking other steps to make sure we have his day in court.
So whether Elian likes it or not, he looks set to be on U.S. soil for some time to come. And there is no sign whatsoever that he may be going home anytime soon.
Emma Joseph, and we're just in. Island-hopping airline LIA today cancelled flights from Antigua and Barbados because of a flight attendant strike. BBC Caribbean report understands that the airline is negotiating overdue paychecks in the wake of its financial problems. Labour Commissioner Austin Josiah began mediating talks between the airline and the Flight Attendants Association Thursday afternoon. LIA has been plagued by losses and its unions have complained for a year about overdue paychecks and unpaid raises. And more on that story on our morning programs tomorrow. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.